Welcome to another episode of the Thrive Kombucha Podcast. I'm Elijah, the founder of Thrive Brew Kombucha Co., an up-and-coming kombucha brewery in downtown Lexington, Kentucky. At Thrive Brew, our mission is to brew clean, crushable kombucha to nourish you to thrive. This podcast is simply an extension of that mission where we reflect and share the ins and outs of the journey it's been building out a nourished kombucha community. If you find any value or enjoyment from this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you would leave a rating and a review on the platform you are listening to. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes that promote our favorite fermented beverage. Cheers. What is going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode. Today, we're going to be talking all about story, and not just any story. The story of, I would say yours truly, but does that indicate all of us and everything that's happened? If you say yours truly, that's just you.
I think so.
Yeah, so not that. The story of Thrive.
Yeah. If you said yours truly, it might be the story of Elijah.
Yeah, we don't want that.
It's part of it.
A boy and a girl came to that loved each other.
I think it's weird they said a boy and a girl.
That's very strange.
Not a man and a woman.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about today.
Well, it's similar to how kombucha is made, right?
Yeah. The girl, SCOBY.
The boy, SCOBY.
This is the content you tune in for. We know it. That's why we bring it week after week.
I began the formation of a joke, and I've decided to refrain.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about it later.
Probably best.
Yeah. But I'll tell you about it later.
So we're going to talk about all about story today, specifically the story of Thrive, how we came to be. When I grew up, I definitely never thought that I was going to be founding a kombucha company. That's for sure. Trevor, just let's say 2 years ago, did you ever think you'd be working in the kombucha industry?
No, I didn't know there was one. I definitely wouldn't have thought of it in terms of a kombucha industry.
You would have thought about it as I saw that one time on a shelf somewhere, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Or along those, or my employer at the time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Made his own, but was also in talks with you. So
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we supply them.
That's true. You were waiting for it.
Shout out, Drinklings.
Drinklings.
What's up?
Randy.
Randall. So, yeah, we're going to talk about a story. Looking forward to it. It's been a journey, man. Ups and downs. We're going to try to keep this one to 1 hour.
We can do it. We can do it. We absolutely can.
We can do it.
We won't, but we can. All right.
So, what do we got? Where are we going to start?
For starters, what are you drinking right now?
Dude, that is the most pertinent question of this entire podcast.
It really is.
I am going for the blueberry hops. It is a new test batch flavor. We've made it a time or two. And it is fabulous.
Yeah.
Blueberries put right into the batch, fermented with Citra hops.
Yeah, if you've listened to our older episodes, you'll recall us, we did an experiment where we changed the hop varietal. And yes. We just realized Citra was really just the superior.
It's the one.
Yeah.
It's the one for us. It brings all those high citrus vibes. I mean, like, you put your nose in this glass and it just bounces out citrus. We were tasting one of Trey's friends on it. Who was here the other day, Trey? He ain't listening. He's in the back.
He's leaving.
He's balling
out. He's trying to get out of here.
He's trying to go home. What friend of yours was here the other day that we were tasting the blueberry hops to? Ivan. That's right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good Ivan.
Good old Ivan.
Shout out to Ivan. Ivan came by. We were hooking him up with some booch. He tried some blueberry hops, and he was like, is there grapefruit?
Cherry?
Is there tangerine? You know, there's all these types of things, and it's it just bounces out citrus.
It does. It does.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about this one. This one may or may not be sticking around. We'll see. But one thing's for certain, go down to the web store. You can order this one right to your door.
Absolutely.
If you're interested in trying it out, if you've never had hopped kombucha.
Oh, this is a really good one to try.
Oh, my gosh.
This is like the perfect one.
It's the perfect one. Blueberry is just enough flavor and subtlety to just round out the hops. You know what I mean? Just hopped kombucha is delicious, but just that little bit of fruit, it just makes it bounce really nicely. But it doesn't, the blueberries don't try to steal the show. They let the hops shine, which is why we really love this brew. So if you've never tried hopped kombuchas and you want to check one out, either to just like kind of see what it would be like if you're a home brewer or whatever, just head down to the web store. Click the little link down in the description and pack yourself a little 8-pack. Mix and match. You know what I mean? Know what I'm saying, man?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be good.
What are you drinking, Trev?
I don't know how much I'm allowed to say about it because so I have a flavor that is upcoming, but I have it in a 3-to-1 ratio with our short stack.
What?
Yeah.
Oh,
our upcoming
okay,
fall
gotcha,
flavor.
Gotcha. I was looking at the color and it's like a, you know, it's like a gold clear.
It is.
It's like that.
It looks like
traditional
Kentucky Mule.
Yeah, it looks like Mule. Like super traditional, almost light lager beer style type of a color.
It does.
And I was like, what is this flavor? Oh, yeah, the test batch, the fall test batch.
That's right.
Yeah, we've been testing some things out for this fall. We'll leave that one in the bank.
We'll leave it. We'll announce that when it's time, because there will be a time.
Oh, yeah. I am.
Because we got some exciting things about it.
I am very excited about that flavor.
And today was the day we got,
it was a good day,
things confirmed about it.
Everything got confirmed. It's happening. The fall flavor we've been testing is happening.
Yep. So yeah, I did a 3-to-1 ratio with a little bit of our short stack, our coffee.
You're crazy about that one.
It's really good.
Trevor's drank more of it than anyone in the entire world.
It's true. Just because I like the uniqueness of it.
Yeah.
I like the variety of experience. But I mostly wanted this one because I wanted some of the depth from the maple syrup added to it.
Mm.
I didn't want too much. I just wanted a little bit of that kind of sweetness.
Dude, you're really leaning into fall, aren't you?
Not terribly, but this one, it's getting me ready.
I feel like you're leaning.
Based on one drink, that I had one time today. This is the second time I've had it today.
But like after the day you've had, I feel like you're leaning into comfort.
Oh, it's... I've had a great day. I don't know what you're talking about.
Trey, end of the day, he's looking at us, he's staring at us, he's cracking Kentucky Mules. You know he's done.
It honestly looked like he was just going to chug that whole thing. Here we go.
Oh, tip her back, baby.
Oh my
tipper.
Gosh. Which is hilarious because I know that's supposed to be his road booch.
Trey, is there anything you want to enlighten people with on your way out the door?
Don't forget to put all the strawberry in.
Yeah.
Elijah, do you want to give them context?
Those
for that?
Times when, you know, you're at the end of the week, you think you're wrapping everything up, everything's coming together, you're transferring over a fermented batch into your bright tank, and you all of a sudden realize, I forgot to put the strawberry in the blush.
Some of it. Not all of it. Yeah.
Some of it. So, people, let this be your lesson. Don't forget the strawberries in your blush. Oh, wait. You don't make it. That's all right. In any of your batches.
And it's still lessons to live by.
All right. Cheers, bro. Hey, we'll cheers to you. See you, brother.
For the homie.
Have a good weekend.
Would you like to try it?
I don't know, man.
You don't have to. It's okay. It's not strong.
Dude, that smells really good.
It is.
Dude, I'm about that.
Yeah.
Dude, that's actually really
good.
Isn't it though? Yeah. A little short stack with our fall blend. That is, dude, now that's.
Just a little.
That's a flavor. We might have to put that one in the back pocket.
Okay.
All right. Anyhow.
Remember that hour we're going to keep this to?
Yeah, we'll do our best.
Okay, anyway. So, yeah, Blueberry Hops is now available.
Yeah, give it a try.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to talk about really the story of Thrive Brew, where it started, its origins, up to where we are now.
Yes.
So, Elijah, we'll just start off with...
I was born.
What was your first kombucha experience?
So, first kombucha experience, I remember the exact flavor. I remember the exact situation, actually. My wife, the beautiful one, introduced me. She had been to culinary school and had always been an adventurous eater. We were dating. We were in the Lexington Whole Foods parking lot. We had gone in, and this was my first contact with organic and natural food, so there's a couple things about the experience I remember, random details. We came out of the Whole Foods checkout line with, I think, two bags, and we had spent, like, $50 to $75, and I was, like, at that time, coming from a background of, like, always going for the bargain, soda drinker, you know what I mean? Like, a drink is a dollar. If it's more than a dollar, I mean, my gosh. I mean,
right.
We're stretching it here. So two bags of groceries, $75 later, we're out in the parking lot. I'm sitting with that fact, like, oh my gosh, how much money did I just spend on all this, you know, groceries? What am I getting myself into? And then Annie pulls out of the bag a Mystic Mango GT's Synergy Kombucha. Actually, I don't know if it was Synergy at the time. Random geek facts, but it is now. So she pulled it out. Immediately when she cracked the top, she's like, here, try this. As it was coming towards me, I just get that whiff of, like, that tart, you know, vinegary type of a fermented whiff that comes as it's just being moved over towards me from her hand. And immediately, I'm just off put by that entire smell and the entire experience. I take a sip because, I mean, she's a girl of my dreams, and she's giving me something, so I'm gonna be into it. I try it, and I absolutely abhor it. And
if I can ask, what about it do you distinctly remember not liking about it? Like, what was off-putting to your palate
just
at that
time? Fermented nature of it. I had never had anything fermented. I mean, even things that I had never had anything that was fermented. No kimchi, sauerkrauts, barely any pickles growing up. I mean, that's not even necessarily fermented, but like vinegared even, you know, just anything with any sort of acid. I was never a vinaigrette. I mean, I'm from the middle of the cornfields of Indiana. It's ranch on everything, you know, salads. There's no, you know, vinegar-based dressings on your salad or anything like that.
I love that because just a couple of minutes ago, you were downing some sauerkraut.
Right out of the jar, yeah. by the forkful.
Uh-huh. It's perfect.
So it was very abhorrent to me. It's really great. I really love being able to really viscerally remember that moment because I'm the one who does most of our customer interaction at this point, sales, events, things like that. So when people come up to the table and they're off-put, which ours is even a little less aggressive than that one even was at the time. And so I'm always able to be very sympathetic towards that person. You know, I understand. I didn't love kombucha at first taste, even though tons of people do. That was not my story. And so being off-put in that way, of course, Annie being the girl that she is, she would continually drag me back to Whole Foods or natural grocers and continually come out with new different flavors of kombucha and continually push them my way. And it was kind of, as I look back on it, it was a whole palate change for me because I had grown up meat, potatoes, salt, pepper. I mean, over exaggeration, but basically that type of a cuisine growing up. And so just coming, like, me and Annie's first date was sushi. I didn't even know what sushi was, basically. And that was our first date.
Was that in town here?
Up in Indiana.
Up in Indiana?
Yeah.
Okay.
But So just her influence that I am forever grateful for of stretching the palate as well as cutting sugar, cutting processed foods way back in the things that we were eating, cutting things like fast food, all these types of things slowly but surely, I think naturally just realigned my palate to start not overly chasing sugar and fat and salt, which is like, you know, every fast food and everything that they, you know, play tricks on your palate with, to not be so addicted to those things, to be more open to a little bit more lively, flavorful things. In this scenario, kombucha. So that's one thing that I always am aware of with people, that I kind of think of a general rule of thumb is most people, especially in our culture, are prone to be addicted to those things because that's what's put in all of our foods and everything. So I'm just able to be more sensitive to that now. And so I remember that experience very viscerally. So that was the first contact with kombucha.
You are, in fact, so sensitive to those things now that Trey and I make jokes about it here.
Yeah. I'm the butt end of the
joke. It is not always, but it is very consistent that when we try something or eat or drink anything, we'll always make the joke about, wow, that is just way too sweet for me, or anything like that. And again, you were just telling me, I think it was earlier this week, that you had not had ibuprofen or anything like that, just because you just hadn't for like 15 years. And so you're
high school.
Yeah. So you're just really sensitive to anything that has those kinds of chemical reactions.
Yes.
So I feel like learning that in particular, or this week, helped me to appreciate even more so how sensitive you could be to sugars and sweetness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it was some kind of like pre-workout that you had that got you going. Gosh.
This last Monday. I mean, that's right. I felt like I was going to take the world all on that day.
Which you probably needed for the week that you had.
It was, I had not taken pre-workout since my probably like junior year of high school.
I believe it.
And this was a very clean, non-caffeinated pre-workout. I'm talking like very clean. I took that sucker and I'm telling you what, from like halfway through my workout, I felt like I could have lifted my whole house. It definitely started out the week with a bang. It was amazing, too, because there was no drop-off from it. So
the other thing... It was good product. Oh, there wasn't?
Yeah,
okay.
I never got a big crash.
That's really cool. The other thing that's really funny in my imagination about this is I know that this workout was happening, like, at 5 or 6 a.m.
5:15?
5:15, yeah, exactly. So it's like 5:15, feel like you can take on the world. And just, that's a level that I think most can't wrap their heads around. So those poor chickens. I don't know.
They saw and heard it all.
I don't want to know what you did to them. No. Anyway, that's great. So, do you remember what kombucha, like at what point in trying all those kombuchas they started to actually like them?
So luckily Annie was soft on me. She kept pushing the Mystic Mango on me. She would kind of she would try some new ones, but then she would circle back with that one for me. And looking back now with all the things I know, that was like a great, for GTs, which definitely is not one of the like lightest or easiest ones to come into contact with necessarily, because it has, they brew it with a lot of the tang still in there, you know, a lot of the acid still in there. But that one is specifically great because it has quite a bit of that mango puree juice in it. So it has that little sweet barrier to kind of help. And so she kept circling back to that one. And so the Mystic Mango was my jam for probably a year.
Is that, there was another one you brought. I don't remember if it was that specific one that, to my recollection, like it tasted pretty much just like an adult version of Sunny D. Was it the Mystic Mango or was it a different orange one?
Yeah. I mean, if I've ever related anything to that, that would be the closest one in a kombucha context to that one. Yeah.
That'd be a good one to
Yeah. It's a great one.
Really, acclimate the palate to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially someone who'd come from just, like, straight sodas, Cokes, you know, things like that. That was a great, onboard.
Cool.
Yeah.
So.
Not the flavor that inspired a kombucha business, but the flavor that brought me into the fermented community.
Yes. So now you like kombucha.
The family.
The
fermented family.
I don't think so.
Trevor loves the word family.
We'll just keep moving
forward. We'll keep it at that.
Yeah. So yeah, you like kombucha now? Tell me, how much did you like kombucha?
It was crazy because once my palate started changing and I had tried it multiple times and then kind of just the more I consumed of it, which looking back, I can put words to this, but just the more I consumed of it, the more I wanted kombucha. So it grew from a, let's try this now and again, to like, I need at least one of these every day, like type of thing. It's like,
yeah.
If I don't get it, it's like, I'm thinking about it. It's one of those things. So
was it, again, some of that just like acid craving and stuff? Or
looking back on it now, realizing a few things about your body. Your body has natural cravings. If you have a sweet craving at night, I don't believe in fighting that. I believe in going with it. But what I don't believe is that you should go fill it with, you know, the 1 gallon crap ice cream from the store at midnight. You know what I mean? It's like, no, like crack open a watermelon. Your body's probably craving sugar because you need energy and there's some nutrients in that you need. And so I'm a big believer in that. It's just the things that we put into those cravings that end up usually screwing us, you know? So with kombucha, I mean, there's that element involved, but then now also knowing all the acids that are in kombucha, once you start consuming fermented beverages and foods, you just start feeling better overall. Your gut health gets in order. Then, you know, now looking back, knowing that there's a gut-brain axis and there's a lot of mental health being related to what's going on in your gut. Imagine that. What you eat actually becomes who you are, blah, blah, blah. So just feeling better and even subconsciously feeling better, looking back on it, just provided this craving for the product to where, and then I had cut soda out, so I was drinking water, sparkling water, and coffee and kombucha, you know? So it was like a lively, like fun beverage of the day for me, you know? Always, even to this day, coffee first thing in the morning is one of my favorite parts of the entire day. And then it would move into water. And then like at some point you'd just be like, man, I am just craving something kind of flavorful and sparkling, especially. And kombucha just fit that role for me. So we were drinking at least one each a day, you know? So on not career oriented jobs, that became pretty expensive pretty quickly.
So it created a bit of a problem for you guys.
Yeah. Big, big dilemma on the budgets we had. So the first thing that we would do is we'd wait a few times a year. Whole Foods would run a huge GT's sale where they would do, I think it was something like 2 for $4. So for like $2, you could snag a GT's. So we would literally, during that time, we would hone down our fridge and buy like 4 to 6. I mean, we would fill our entire fridge basically, which just besides like daily groceries.
Do they still do deals like that?
No.
I imagine not.
Definitely not nowadays in the season of inflation we're in.
Truly.
But yeah, they don't really run them that low anymore. But at the time we were taking advantage of those and then just kind of buying them. And then obviously that became a big problem on our budgets with the amount of kombucha that we were consuming.
So when did you start brewing?
Well, my wife's dad, my father-in-law, had 6 months before us started brewing kombucha.
See, that's part of the story I didn't know.
Yeah, so he'd started brewing. And so we had kind of been just talking about it back and forth. And my wife, Annie, had got him into it, had got him the kit. And, you know, got him. But then it was kind of cool. I think it was for Christmas or it was some sort of a thing. He bought us a starter kit. And so we just started brewing. And I literally, and we're going to link up some of this in the Patreon, but me and Annie were going through, like rolling through old pictures, you know, through the phone last night. And we came through a lot of the beginning, like we came to the picture of the original batch of our first batch of kombucha, which was pretty rad. I didn't know that we still had that photo. So it was a picture of literally the first batch of what would be Thrive Brew kombucha.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So he got us a homebrew kit and I hit the ground running. It was kind of the thing that I just kind of took over. I was very interested in the process, kind of how it all worked. And yeah, that's how it began.
Crazy. At what point were you brewing more than you were buying?
Yeah, so pretty much right away, we tried, after we got the batches going, we kind of made it a thing like, hey, if we're going to tackle this project, let's let whatever we produce replace what we're buying. You know, so right away, it was kind of like, okay, the pressure was on because my kombucha addiction was there. So it was like, you've got to pump out some batches. You know what I mean? You got to get something that's worth drinking because we're going to cut out the expenditures. And so pretty much right away, we were off buying things in massive amounts, always trying every new flavor that we could get because, you know, that's part of the love of beverage culture, you know, to be able to, you know, get everything beverage-oriented, new that you can get your hands on and give it a taste, you know?
Yeah, the excitement of it all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, at what point did you start sharing what you guys were making with other people?
Yeah.
Did people first start asking you about it, or did you start with, you know, I'm making this, I'm enjoying this, you have to try it?
Yeah, it was totally the most organic process imaginable. It was, I love kombucha. I love an active, healthy lifestyle, you know, at this point. And it was like kombucha fits in that, helps fuel me, nourish me to do these things. And it was just like, I love kombucha. That's it. You know, there was no agenda behind the brews except for I want to make this as delicious and nutritious as and seamless as possible for our, you know, me and Annie, basically. And then it was just one of those things where, like, when people would come over for dinner, they see this weird brew on your counter and they're like, what in the world is that? And you're like, hold on one second. You open up the fridge, grab one out, pour them a little sample, and just more times than not, I mean, we definitely had a few of those, like, this is so weird, and, like, I hate this, or, you know, but we had more times than not, like, this is delicious. Like, what is this? And then just tell them about the process, tell them how we do it, you know? And it was mostly that at, like, dinner parties or just, like, hanging out with people, friends and stuff at the house, or since I had kind of went off soda completely by this point, it was kind of like, hey, we're going to hang out at camping or whatever, and there's friends around, share some. That's what we bring. We brought the kombucha with us, you know, in the flip-top 16-ounce bottles. And we would just share those around the campfire, and that was kind of the beginning process. There was no real agenda to, like, oh, maybe we can make this a business, you know what I mean? It was just a love for the product, a love for the process, like, I still look back on those homebrewing days with a real fondness. Like, that was so fun getting to learn that stuff. I mean, it's almost comical at this point compared to, I was talking to Annie as we were looking at those, that 1 gallon batch on our counter compared to our process now, everything except for it's exactly the same, just so much more. Like, there's just so many more processes and, like, ways of measuring and consistency and just everything's, it's all the same, but it's all different.
Yeah. that initial 1 gallon, like, was it a 1 gallon or 5 gallon?
1 gallon.
The 1 gallon. Was that baby Wallace, or did Wallace come from somewhere else?
Wallace was not even a concept.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So,
I just mean,
is that the starter culture?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's the same one. It's never died off. So,
oh my gosh.
The homebrew kit from 7+ years ago is still alive. And for all of you who have been drinking Thrive Kombucha, is going in your bellies.
That's insane.
It's pretty unbelievable.
That really is insane.
And it's kind of interesting to think, like, this is a very strange thought, but, like, the bacterias that are created through our culture and that multiply all have the same strain. You know, it changes over time based on the different nutrients that we give it and thing, but the same basic bacterias are in it. And it's kind of crazy to think that the same bacterias that were created in that are now literally living in everyone who's consumed Thrive Kombucha.
Oh my gosh.
That's kind of, I know it can go down a really weird, like, new agey, hippie type of a way, but it is kind of a crazy concept to think about.
Yeah.
That there's a weird unity to that culture.
Absolutely.
Anyways.
Which is all turning us into things. Which is even more interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
Okay, so at what point did selling the kombucha come into play?
So me and my wife both come from culinary and farm backgrounds. We both have worked on local farms. My wife specifically worked on local sustainable farms. At the time when we were making these brews, we started just having a couple friends. Actually, my wife worked on a local organic farm. The person, the farm she worked for, was like, hey, would you ever think about making me some kombucha? And I was like, I guess I can do two batches. I mean, I do one. It's not that big a deal. So I started brewing kombucha, doubling it, and giving it to the gal that she worked for at the farm. And so that was the first kind of client that we ever had. And then it was a thing to where Annie comes from a culinary background, and we opened up a personal chef business for her to where for the next, like, you know, actually about 4+ years, she would cook for families, kind of pre-prepare meals, gourmet meals, especially dietary specific for different clients that she had. And it was like out of the like 8 clients that she had, like 6 of them wanted, we just kind of added it on there and they all wanted kombucha. So it was like, cool. This is like a cool add-on. So we just had this little tiny operation, but I was making kombucha for like 8-9 people. And then it was a thing to where the farmer she worked for at the time or before had said, hey, would you ever think about adding this as an addition to the CSA that we have? And a CSA is just basically a farm share. You just pay up front at the beginning of the year, and then throughout the year, based on the harvest level, they give you so much per week as it's being harvested. So it's a great deal for the farm. It's a great deal for patrons. You know, if it's a bountiful year, you get lots more. If it's not so bountiful of the year, we all kind of earn it together, and it keeps the whole process. It's amazing. If you can be a part of a CSA, you definitely should.
My in-laws are.
Yeah, it's awesome. So she just said, hey, she grew vegetables. She had partnerships with a local honey producer. And then as well as like a blackberry farmer. And she's like, hey, would you ever want to add this as an addition? And I was like, that sounds daunting, but that sounds kind of cool. And at the time I was working at Whole Foods Market, and I was thinking, I guess this can be my little side time gig. You know what I mean? Like just take over a little more room on the counter at home and we can try to do it. So I started. At that point, it was kind of like the beginning of what would be a continuous, now at this point, 6-year scaling process, which was, how do we make this high quality, still within the values of what I know is good, but on a larger scale? And so for that summer, I offered my kombucha, the two flavors that I made at the time, original and pomegranate. for the rest of the summer, I'd made bottles. We did the whole thing as best we knew how, and it would be offered, and I would kind of, we did it in all reusable bottles. So I would bring bottles to them, you know, when they would come pick up their share, and then they would bring back the empties, and then I would take those back, wash them, you know, sanitize them, and then just restart the process. So that was kind of the beginning of like the beginnings of the business.
When did the thought of going full-time this way start to enter in?
Sometime after that summer. Once the summer ended, we I think I messed my timelines up. I was still working my construction job at the time.
Okay.
I got hired on at Whole Foods. That's right. I came off the road off that construction job. I got hired on at Whole Foods. I was doing this kombucha thing on the side, and then I experienced the kombucha wall, which was incredibly tiny at the time, at Whole Foods. And I was just seeing customer after I was in the grocery department, so I stocked the kombuchas. I stocked all the inner parts of the store. And I was just seeing customer after customer come up to this kombucha wall. And so it was just this ingrained thing. Like, I make kombucha. I'm seeing customer after customer after customer coming to the kombucha wall. And I'm just like, something in that just clicked off. Like, man, maybe this is a thing we could do. You know, what if I could create kombucha and sell it?
I think that's pretty natural.
Yeah.
Right? For anyone who, you know, is kind of, has a little side hustle thing that they're doing, and then seeing that there is potential for it to grow beyond that side hustle, to entertain that prospect.
Yeah.
That's pretty natural.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that makes sense. That kind of start. At what point did you start taking it seriously, though?
So working at Whole Foods, probably when I actually really enjoyed my job at Whole Foods. It was actually a really great, a great corporation to work for. I have nothing but good things to say about Whole Foods.
Let me just add in there real quick. Elijah talks this way about working at Whole Foods even when he's not on the podcast. So it's just important to throw out there because we do have an account with them. Yeah. Just so that we're clear, this is how he talks about it on the day-to-day.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my time at Whole Foods. Like, I enjoyed getting to learn about all the different foods, the processes that go into, like, what operation of a grocery store. I mean, your whole life, you just walk in a grocery store, products are supposed to be on the shelf, so I can grab them and go through the checkout line. But, like, just the inner workings of how a grocery store works is so cool. And just being able to come in contact and help customers find things, and, like, coming into contact with natural, more naturally based foods and beverages was just a great experience. So, but one of the things that I realized, which for me became a big hang up, and this is just a quick aside, is that to grow in a corporation, you have to be mobile. You have to be willing to move. Like, you have to go to the positions that are the next stage up for you, so somewhere else, wherever it's open. And so that became, it was a no-go for me. I was locationally bound for other reasons. And so I knew that, okay, this probably isn't going to be the route for me in the long run. So that little bit of, like, okay, I know this isn't the long route, even though I love my job.
But this is about as far as you'll be able to go.
This is as far as I'm going to be able to go without spending, you know, 4 decades, you know, here at this location, trying to move way up, which is just the way it works. So with those kind of things mixed in, and then my love for the kombucha process, like, it was just like a great hobby. I loved it. You know, it was something I look forward to doing every week. With that, and then with me always wanting to be some sort of entrepreneurial pursuit, I had helped open 2 other coffee shops in my hometown and just had been a part. For better or for worse, in high school, I was a part of a band. And, like, just the entrepreneurial element, I'm even thankful for those experiences. Just, like, it's total bootstrap, you know, when you're, like, in those scenarios. Like, how in the world are we going to go record a professional demo? It's, like, when you have no money. You know, just so I'm even thankful for those experiences. I had been drawn towards that entrepreneurial kind of figure it out yourself type of career. Yeah. And so all those things mixed together inspired the idea, like, hey, what would it take? You know, what would it take to make kombucha and sell it? You know? And so thus began the journey, which would be over a year and a half to maybe even a little more than a year and a half from that point till the day that Thrive Kombucha opened up, you know, over a year and a half later.
Crazy.
So basically what I would do is work my 8-hour shift and then spend like 2 hours a day researching things. Like, just coming home right afterwards and just being like, okay, I know how to heat water on a stovetop. How do I heat lots of water? What equipment does this? I mean, I'm talking ground zero. It's just like, if I would have been able to walk through our establishment just one loop quickly, the amount of headache would have been cut to like 75%. But just, I had never known anything about brewing at that point. So it was just ground zero on every piece of every process. And then we had decided to not go this. I had tried to go a shared kitchen route because I didn't know how to build out a kitchen. I didn't know state, city, county requirements, you know, all of these types of things. And so I had wanted to just do a shared kitchen space, but we kind of had a run in, unfortunately, with, we just weren't welcomed in the kitchen space for unfortunate reasons. And so I had just decided, okay, I'm just going to learn how to build this thing out. I had some great help from a couple people that gave me some good, at least, directions to run in. But I had to design an entire kitchen along with every process to create kombucha with only the knowledge of brewing 1 gallon glass jars on the counter, which is, I know for you at this point, kind of seems wild to think about, I'm sure.
I was talking with Trey about it just the other day. It's like, I just can't fathom.
Yeah.
That really is incredible. What was opening day like?
Amazing.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It's kind of crazy to think back now. I brewed all, because construction was delayed so many times, we had set so many open dates that I had said, we're opening on this date, I don't care what. It just had got to that point to, yeah, where we have to open. We ended up opening on like December 1st, which, if you know anything about refreshing beverage, not necessarily
a cold bubbly one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily prime time to open, especially going into holiday season. But it was just like, we have got to get this freaking thing open. So I had brewed all the batches at home in our house. We couldn't put anything in the space yet. So I had, we had our 3-tap kegerator, you know, the one that we had down at Manchester Coffee.
Yeah.
I had that in my house, and you've actually been in my house. It's, yeah, not that big. We had that.
Where did you have it?
Just probably in the dining room somewhere.
Okay.
Like just sitting there plugged in. I was literally chilling down the batches in corny kegs, carbonating them in the house to try to get them ready for the opening down here, because we didn't get access to the building for like production until the day before the opening. So it was just total bootstrapped, do what you have to do to make it happen type of stuff. And so, but opening day was absolutely amazing, actually. We probably had, you know, and it's hard to like fully build out this story, and then we can move on quickly from it. But it was just me and Annie, no marketing team, no, you know, production team. It's just like, it was just me and Annie trying to, no clue how to run a business, no clue how to run any marketing, no clue how to get the word out or any process, and trying to open the doors. And it was pretty fabulous. It was perfect timing for us. Instagram was not over-adified, and organic reach was still possible. And so just through basically Instagram, I guess I got to be forever grateful for that. We opened the doors, and like 75 people came in first day. It was amazing. We opened up on a Saturday, and it was awesome. Just literally 5 taps of kombucha, no prepackage, just growler fills and cups out the door. And I was on cloud 9 as far as I'm concerned. And that's the short version.
No, I think that's awesome. What I'm loving is, as you're telling the story and you're talking about having the corny kegs and everything in the in your dining room, my appreciation for Andy is just increasing more and more. I'm just like, what a gem to have that going on in her house, just backing it and everything.
The quick aside, you would walk into our house, you walk into the kitchen, and then immediately turn right down the hallway on your left. Our dining room, there was two tables and they were completely filled with 5-gallon glass jars of kombucha brewing, like 2, 3, 4 months up to start date. So for like 4 or 5 months, bless Annie's heart, she dealt with an entire room of the house. And every guest that had to walk through, every family member had to walk by this crazy science experiment and like look over like, what is my daughter's husband doing? You know, like, what is Elijah doing? You know, like,
it was, oh my goodness.
Just like, wow. Just a wild takeover of a lot of the house. Like, yeah, I could have never done it without her. Couldn't do it to this day without her.
I just, I remember last year, a couple of people came to check the place out. They were in town because they had, hadn't for a while.
Oh, cool.
And they came to specifically to see you.
Oh, okay.
This is when we had the tap room. And so we're talking about, and they're talking about how, yeah, we used to go to their, to like a little dinner that they would host and everything like that. They're asking about, are all of them back there, the SCOBY and everything? And so I was like, yeah, absolutely. I invited them over to take a look. And they're expecting all these jars everywhere because that's what they remember. They remember all those jars on the counter and everything. And they're seeing these giant vessels now.
Man.
So that's really cool. Just so you know, I went ahead and I made a decision that I'm actually enjoying this, like, learning about all these things because it's filling holes and gaps in my knowledge of the story. So I went ahead and made the decision that we're actually going to split this up into 2 episodes.
Cool.
Because I'm enjoying learning about these different pieces all the way in the beginning that I was not here for.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd let you know. So I'm not in a hurry or a rush to move on to some of the other content.
Right on.
So my next question is, you know, what was it like kind of introducing Lexington to kombucha?
Crazy. Hard. Difficult. Impossible.
Words every entrepreneur knows.
Yeah. I mean, there's different businesses that have different... Everything has its own struggle points. Our struggle points were... Nobody know. Like, every conversation we start is, what is kombucha? Like, 75%+ of them. First year or two, starts
was,
there.
Did this include the opening day when you had those people show up?
So there's this thing known in the business market as early adopters.
Right,
Those are the people there that first day of opening.
Really also, encouraging first day.
They're also like food bloggers and people like that that like always just have motives to be there the first day. You know what I mean? Things like that. But a lot of them are just kind of like people that are just like down for new experiences, new...
More adventurous palates.
Yeah, yeah, just new things. And so most of those people were that. Also, we were, I have to give tons of credit, we were warmly accepted in by both, I would say, a mixture of microbrewery and coffee shop crowds just due to long-lasting relationships that have been formed throughout, you know, just our love for those places, you know, over the years and just attendance and support and things like that. So we were really warmly welcomed in by those people. But yeah, even to this day, I wish that I could say that it's all gone, but it's gotten a lot better, I feel like, over the last year and a half or so. But the first couple years, it was just, what? Kombucha? What? Kombachu? Kombucha? Like, they just, no concept of it, what it is, no interaction with any traditionally fermented foods, beverages, besides wine and beer. And so, yeah, it was really difficult. Really difficult the first while. But we had, it was one of those things to where once we started finding our core unit, we had a very loyal core unit. Like, we would see people every week, you know, like, and it wasn't just like the 5 people that are memorable. It was like those 100 people, we see them every week, you know? And so we found those kind of loyalist people that were into kombucha. They were like kombucha enthusiasts, and they fell in love with what we were doing. They fell in love with our product. And it's kind of cool because, like, even people from those first 6 months, we still have a lot of them that come by, even like the farmer's market stuff, like every week. So it's super cool to like have developed that almost now 4-year relationship with people around this super obscure, wacko fermented beverage. It's kind of cool.
That's wild. Was it mostly through Instagram
got the word out and everything?
Yeah, heard about you guys, or
we definitely took advantage of paid advertising.
Okay.
On Instagram, cool. And also just organically connecting with other people. We tried to do as many collaborations as we could in the beginning, so that kind of helped. But, yeah, mainly Instagram, some Facebook, and then just me literally, I mean, I'm talking, the guy who worked here in the very beginning, the first hire on the business, Alex, me and him would take turns. We would call them booch runs, and we would just literally go out to every business in the community and give them free stuff. Like, we would have like 5 places a day that we would just alternate days, and we would go out and just introduce ourselves or reconnect with people, give them free samples, hang out, and then go do that like 5 times a day. And we would do that consistently. And so just with a product that's so obscure and there's no context for, just that persistence kind of helped solidify us in the community and let our category kind of be a known category, at least on a local basis, you know?
I remember the day that Alex came to the coffee shop I was managing.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's kind of a weird thing. That's crazy.
It is. Well, I'm just thinking how crazier it would have been if it were a day that you were doing a booch run.
I know.
Could have been crazy.
Yeah.
I think it was a ginger one that he introduced us to.
Probably the Granny G.
Probably. It probably was.
I still miss that flavor. We'll make it one day. Maybe this fall.
Maybe. As someone who has to process it now.
We'll see.
We will see.
Maybe just a 5-gallon test batch.
You know what? I'd enjoy it. I was to do that. So, how did you make the decision for the name of Thrive Kombucha? Like, where did Thrive start?
Great question. Thrive was a word. You know how sometimes you just have certain things that are repeated to you?
Yeah.
It's just like, for one reason or another, things are repeated in your mind. Maybe you're the one kind of looking for that. Maybe it's just coming to you. However your worldview comes, obviously plays into this.
Sure.
But that word, from songs from my favorite bands to people that I looked up to and respected, to books that I was reading, it was just, that word was just there. And it was before kombucha. You know, I had posters in my dresser with that word way before Thrive Brew Kombucha, now Thrive Kombucha at the beginning time. But even before any of that was even a concept, that word Thrive was with me. And just realizing that we only get one shot at this life, we want to suck the marrow out of life. And I want to be a person that lives life to the fullest. And that doesn't mean necessarily jumping out of airplanes and, you know, climbing mountains, you know, even though I think those things would be awesome. But it doesn't necessarily mean that. It means, you know, making sure that you're around for your, and active and healthy for your grandkids. Making, if that's, you know, for me, that's an ideal. You know, if that happens, that would be a great blessing. Or being a great friend to my community and, you know, not being sloppy, being someone that's intentional with my time and, you know, having enough energy to do those things and without going further down that road. It's just, I want to be a person that if at the celebration of life, the funeral or whatever you want to call it, someone can say that he thrived, that's a worthwhile life, you know, to me. So that word was with me for a long time through those various means. And so when it came time to name the company, I honestly didn't even think about it that long. I just, that was a word that was a part of my life, something that I wanted to help other people try to attain. And I thought that kombucha could be a part of helping people on their journey of thriving. Obviously, there's lots more to an entire life, but for my part of kombucha brewing and that being a refreshing, awesome, health-filled beverage, that could be my small addition to people's thriving lives.
So it kind of was a term that resonated with you and kept popping up in almost a synchronistic kind of way.
Yes.
And then it kind of like just had this ideal that was worth pursuing. And then when you're like, okay, I'm going full time, building something that's actually my own now, my own business. It didn't surprise me that it may have felt like a no-brainer. Of course, that's what I'm going to call it.
Yeah. I was very aware in starting the business that Thrive, naming your company Thrive, is not the most SEO friendly thing to a small local business.
Yeah.
Like, there's only a million Thrives out there, you know?
And we have some stories.
We've got
some run-ins with that.
Absolutely. But, there's I don't even need to name them. There's a million Thrive things out there.
Yes.
So it was not a strictly business decision. One of the things that it's one of our values to this day, transparency. It was something that was never written down, but it was always something that I valued from the very beginning. It was like, I want to do something that I can be proud enough to not hide anything. You know, so that was very important to me. So for me, it was like, I have to be true. Yes, this is not the best if you're just looking from an outside perspective business decision, but since Elijah is founding the company and this is what he is about, I need to be transparent and true to that and try to, you know, enact and pursue a mission of helping people to thrive. And so that's how that came to be.
In the earlier stages because you're talking about how you really valued and enjoyed sort of that bootstrap approach.
Yeah.
What were those days?
Well, it's a love hate.
Well, I mean, we use terms difficult, challenging, you know,
opportunities for growth.
Yes. If you're feeling cheeky about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
On your best days.
Uh-huh. So how was, would you say that time was, you were experiencing yourself as thriving, or you saw the outcome of it being thriving in some sense, or part of that pursuit of the ideal?
Definitely both. And for me, it was so long trying to find a direction for a career. Like, I had lots of other things in my life that were going really well. But career-wise, or like just job-wise, not real direction. And, you know, as Trevor can attest to me, I'm a person with a lot of gumption. You know what I mean? Just like...
A lot.
Like, just...
Gumption is a great word to use.
It's like, and that, for me...
It's a flattering
word. It's very healthy to point that in a direction, not just to have it in a realm of chaos.
That's a really good point.
And so when I finally found something to, like, when I decided, hey, I am going to figure out the ins and outs of how to put this together and make this happen, I was, that's my thriving self, is when I can be pointed in a direction, and even though it's insurmountably overwhelming, I remember my first note-taking thing of, like, because I had no task management software or anything at the time, it was a note on my iPhone that was like, I just started writing.
Used pretty, like, up until quite recently.
Pretty recently, yeah. But like the first note that I wrote of, like, when I first began, I wish I still had it. I don't think I do anymore. But of like, what are the things at this point that I think that I need to learn, know, or figure out to open up a kombucha business? And I swear to you not, that list, like, I depressed myself for almost writing that list by the time I was done with it. It was just
everything.
Everything, and I didn't know how to do any of it.
Even where to start.
It was just, it was probably 100 items long, you know, and the amount of, it by the time the doors were open, it probably was 200, you know, 300. But it was very healthy for me. It's not a lifestyle for everyone, but for me, it was very healthy to be, have all that kind of energy pointed in a single direction and like something that I knew that I could possibly make a difference in for the better of humanity and the people that I love and care about. So on all sides of the equation. So
that's so good.
Yeah.
I'm over here. I'm not ignoring you.
No.
I'm trying to find something specific.
Okay. You're just looking away, looking down, just typing away on your iPad.
Yeah, that's me.
No, yeah. So it was definitely an overwhelming process, and I totally understand why most early small businesses fail, because I heard someone say this the other day, you're like a Swiss pocket army knife. You have to, you've got the file, the scissors, the knife, the bottle opener, the tweezers, and it's like you've got to be the accountant, the marketing director, the operations manager, the person who does all the, you know, the salesman.
You got to wear a lot of hats.
You got to be the Swiss pocket army knife, and it's incredibly tough. You know, and you don't do it all really well. Luckily, you're filled with energy and gumption in the beginning. Like, you're not exhausted beyond your wildest dreams in the first while. So yet. You can do all that stuff. You
right,
can do it.
Right.
For at least a period of time. But you have to be someone who's willing to not be the greatest at everything, but still pursue it, you know? And so it was definitely an overwhelming time, especially looking back. I mean, we were open so many hours. I mean, we were open like Monday through Saturday, 10 to 7 p.m. And as you know, I'll talk to someone as long as they want to talk. And so when a customer would come in, production would cease. And when we'd finally close the doors at 7, production would have to continue for the next 3 hours until it was done.
I'm pretty sympathetic to that, because during the pandemic specifically, I was sole operator of the coffee shop.
Yes.
So I had to make the syrups, restock everything, do all of that. And
you
again,
know.
Working there for like 8-9 hours, you know, keeping the whole thing afloat. But you got customers coming in, lines starting to develop. And then you have, in my case, you have the added element of how much do I need to actually enforce some kind of thing. So we'll leave it at that. But
enforce some kind of thing.
Yeah.
None of you service people know anything that we're talking about.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm sympathetic to, okay, I got production going on, but it's in the back of my head, but I'm trying to have a positive customer interaction.
Oh, yeah.
But in the back of my head, I'm panicking because of the things that are
going on. Have to get done.
Yes.
And they're time sensitive.
Yes. next week, I'll ask you about some of the messes that happened, because I know,
oh, yeah.
I believe you have one very specific epic one.
Oh, it's what gave me
at
my,
that time.
It's what gave me my nickname in this place. You know, everything in this place, if it's a mess up, has a name. Trevor just earned his new one today. Trevor's
almost
Waterman.
Dying.
Trevor's Waterman.
I'm Water Wrangler.
All right. You're Water Wrangler.
Okay.
Trevor right. tries to wrangle the water, but it really wrangles him.
It does more than wrangle me. It cuts me up. That and yes, these.
We'll talk
these
more
gloves.
About that.
Oh my goodness. Okay. All right. I have one final thing for a send off. So
cool.
This amazing photo.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What a wild time.
When I was going back through the time, like through your through the Instagram. Just to you know, appreciate the story, like, because I've heard this story a couple times, but I wanted have a framework for the time frame, and I'm just like, that was a perfect photo.
We'll post this photo so you guys can see it. But basically, it's a photo of, we now have doubled our footprint space, but it was when that footprint was not doubled at the time, and it's the counter is set. the walk-in's there, but nothing else is there. It's kind of crazy.
I loved it because I'm seeing all these things that are still here, but were a huge part of it, and still even to this day remain a huge part of it, particularly the cart. And but also appreciating the growth. And I was looking through this, and I'm just like, Elijah started with no knowledge of any of this. Couldn't help but admire that guy that was in that photo.
Oh, it's really crazy even what it took to get to that point. And yeah. That was nothing.
Yeah. So my question for you is, if you had the chance, what would you tell that guy who's trying to get it all figured out and starting it?
Man.
To end on a sentimental note.
I've heard this saying. It's not exactly a saying. I'm sure there is a more concise way of saying it, but it's like, would I ever do it again is the question that I always come back to. And it's like, knowing what it would cost at this point, absolutely not.
Ignorance was your friend in that,
oh my
in
goodness,
that phase.
But I hear this with a lot of people that get down the road with their craft, is that just the amount of crap you have to eat, the amount of mistakes you have to make, the amount of money, unfortunately, that you have to waste. And when you're self-funded, it hurts like hell, you know, when you waste that money. The amount of hours is insane. The amount of unknowns, fears, doubts is just so insurmountable. You know, it's a mountain of... Yeah, and you basically have to be half psychotic and crazy to want to try to, like, when you're looking at that mountain, to be like, I'm going to get to the top of it. It's like, you would never begin if you saw that mountain with all those things added of what it created in front of you, you know? So, I wouldn't tell him anything, because the journey is the journey. And I would just say, you know, if you're crazy enough to follow your passion, which I more so believe in becoming excellent, and we talk about this here, is becoming excellent at something and then passion follows. And I believe that to my inner core, is that the more knowledge you gain about a subject, the better you become. Just this natural passion, it just comes out of nowhere almost, you know, because you're the guy with the answers, you're the guy that has the unique skill sets, or you're the guy who... or gal that has the unique thing about this thing. And so I don't know what I would say to that guy. I would say, if you're crazy enough to follow a passion, then don't half-ass it. Just go all in and see what happens, you know, and take each step. I guess what I got a good one. This is one thing that effed me up in the beginning was, comparison is the thief of joy. And that has been something that I would say that I always, especially in the beginning years, personally struggled with. That's a personal struggle. Is to, with the day and age of social media, it's amazing. You can connect with people that are going to gain value from what you do, and you're going to connect with people that give value to you. It's an amazing resource. But it also can be the greatest thief of all your joy, if you're looking to what other people are doing. And so I would tell them to just worry. I would tell that guy in that picture to just worry about what you're working on and make every day, make yourself and everyone's around you and your process better today than yesterday. And just worry about today. And because worrying about what everyone else is doing when you have no clue their backstory or what it took them or what money came to them to get to them where they're at, it's just... you have no context to a little picture on a screen to where they're at, and to just take advantage of where you're at. You know, that's what I would tell that guy, is to just be more in the moment and work on bettering you and everyone around you day to day better than yesterday.
That's awesome.
That would have saved me a lot of like late night stressful work sessions. You know, that would have saved a lot.
Yeah. I probably would look at him and say, you crazy son of a gun, and just kept walking. Just kept walking.
With not, what you know now.
Not try his kombucha, just keep walking.
Just keep walking.
Yeah. Well, Yeah. Thank you, Elijah. I enjoyed filling in some of those gaps.
That's fun. Kind of recounting some of the early things.
It was a good part one.
Yeah. We'll give it a part two next week.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, each and every one of you, if you guys enjoyed this episode, the simple thing you can do to help us grow in this podcast, it really means a lot to us if you could leave a 5-star review. It helps us keep growing this thing. It makes our little hearts so happy when you just spend that 2 seconds to give us that 5-star review.
Our little hearts, so that whenever you give us a 5-star review, it grows 2 sizes.
At least.
At least. So,
if you give us that 5-star review, it'd be amazing. Leave a little written review. It'd be even better. We appreciate it so much. If you want to join and see behind the scenes photos this week specifically, we're going to post a lot of kind of the journey photos, especially the things that we talked about, the picture we were talking about, first batch, things like that. What the original setups kind of looked like, just going down memory lane. We're going to post all that that original stuff over on our Patreon. You can check out that down in the description. We've got all that information. Trev has got all that information down there for you. We're also going to be dropping more exclusive content over there, back behind the scenes footage, promo deals, which we got to talk about that, Trev. I got some ideas for that.
I do too.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. It's that season. It's that time. We're approaching that time of year.
Yeah, I know.
Awesome.
You're right. So we'll talk. We're going to drop some like exclusive, you know, deals and promos on that back end. So if you're interested in that type of stuff, check it out down in the description. If you are interested in seeing if everything we're sharing is a load of crap or it's the real deal, you can order our kombucha right to your door and find out.
Yes, you can.
With a few clicks of your button, you can find out if we're full of crap or if it's real.
Hey, we're about transparency here. So we tell you how we made it. So you can feel good about, regardless, even if you don't like it, you can feel good about what you did try.
That's the truth. So, I love your save.
I do my best.
It's tough with me around.
It's really not.
So, yeah, if you want to check out any of these new flavors, we're always drinking, like, test batch flavors on here when we're going through the podcast. If you want to order those, like, it's amazing. We can ship those right to your door in a couple of days. It's on your doorstep.
Yep.
So we distribute regionally, and let me tell you, I have been on the freaking hunt. Let me tell you, I have been reaching out like a mad, wild dog.
It's true. I have access to his emails. they're going out and they're coming in.
They're
awesome.
Definitely going out and coming back in. So we're picking up new locations, I could say weekly at this point.
Yeah.
And feel pretty good about that transparency. Yeah. Weekly at this point. So check our map feature link in the description, or if you don't, follow us on Instagram specifically at Thrive Brew. That would be awesome. If you got any further questions about the podcast, how we do what we do, behind the scenes, whatever, you can hit us up on info@thrivebrewco.com. brewco.com. Thrive Brew Co. We appreciate each and every one of you that take the time to listen to this podcast. We hope you gain some great value out of it. If you do, hit us up, and we hope you all keep enjoying the wonderful world of kombucha. Cheers to you all. Have a good one. Bye-bye.